Welcome, dear listener, to Heirloom Radio, a different kind of oldies program. I'm your host, John Lovering. On the air from October 1, 1948 to February 22, 1949, with a total of 22 episodes, the Mutual Broadcasting System produced an outstanding series entitled Great Scenes from Great Plays. The show was heard on Friday evenings at 8 p.m. and was sponsored by the National Council of the Protestant Episcopal Church. Now, the goal of the series was to give the church the opportunity to encourage church attendance regardless of one's specific denomination. And to that effect, there was a short discussion of that topic at the end of the show. Walter Hampton hosted the broadcast, and he also starred in the very first episode as the character Cyrano de Bergerac. Now, the quality of the supporting actors was outstanding, as it included people like Basil Rathbone, who you're best known, probably remember him for Sherlock Holmes, Anne Seymour, Beatrice Stray, Jane Cowell, Boris Karloff, and Joan Caulfield. The track you're about to hear is a radio adaptation of Louisa May Alcott's classic Little Women, and it was aired on November 5, 1948, and it featured Joan Caulfield as Jo and Betty Caulfield as Amy. Stephen Schnabel as Professor Bear. You're not going to hear the entire story of Little Women, just a scene from the story, but these are extremely well done. Thank you for listening.
Great Scenes from Great Plays, with your host, Walter Hampden, and starring tonight, Miss Joan Caulfield, in Little Women. Each week at this time, the Episcopal families of your own community and the Episcopal Actors Guild invite you to share the dramatic inspiration of great scenes from great plays as transcribed by famous artists of stage, screen, and radio. And now, here is your host, the distinguished actor-manager, Mr. Walter Hampden.
Thank you, and good evening. One of the most beloved stories in all our literature is Louisa May Alcott's Little Women, and with good reason, I believe. For though our homes today may be very different from the March family home in the story, still the laughter, the happy moments, and the sad ones in the lives of Meg, Jo, Beth, and Amy are mirrors of youth the world over. Tonight we are honored to have in the role of the forthright, impetuous Jo, who wants to play big brother to her sisters and keep the family together, the delightful young star of stage and screen, Miss Joan Caulfield.
Thank you, Mr. Hampden. And because I've always wanted to play Jo, ever since I first read about her in Little Women, I'm especially pleased about being with you in tonight's play. I hope it will bring back, for everyone listening, the same happy memories Jo brings to me.
I'm sure it will, Joan. And we're also happy to have with us tonight Betty Caulfield as Amy and Stephen Schnabel as Professor Bear. So let us raise the curtain now on Little Women. The March family house is big and old and somewhat shabby, and it rests in a dignified, if slightly lopsided, position well back from the tree-shaded street in a small New England town. When we first meet the March girls, it's a Christmas Eve in the early 1860s. In the parlor, a bright fire is crackling in the old-fashioned hearth, casting its warm glow on the lovely faces of the four sisters gathered round. On womanly Meg, the eldest.
It is indeed dreadful to be poor at Christmas time.
On blonde Amy, the youngest.
I agree with you, Meg. I think it's utterly unfair for some girls to have all the pretty things they want and others nothing at all.
On shy and gentle Beth, bending over her embroidery.
Well, at least we have father and mother and each other.
And on Jo. Harum scarum Jo with the flashing gray eyes and the beautiful brown hair and the flyaway look to her clothes.
Well, Christopher Columbus, we haven't got Father.
Joe!
Well, we haven't, Meg. Not while he's away at the wars, we don't.
Father said it was his bounden duty as a chaplain to be with the suffering soldiers.
Well, Christopher Columbus, who said it wasn't? All I wish is he could have taken me along with him, that's all.
Oh, Joe, you aren't serious.
Oh, am I not, though? When Johnny comes marching home again, hooray, hooray.
Joe!
What's the matter?
I wish you wouldn't shout, Joe. It's so dreadfully boyish.
Oh, fiddlesticks. It's a perfectly lovely way to express your feelings. Especially when your feelings are all hungry.
Oh, Marmy will be home soon, Joe, and then we'll have some nice tea and toast.
I know, kitten. I was just mourning the perfectly bully breakfast Marmy gave away this morning.
I can still smell those buckwheat cakes. Well, I'm glad Marmy gave away my Christmas breakfast to those poor Hummel people. I wouldn't have enjoyed a bite, knowing all the while that a whole family was starving.
Just you wait and see, Meg. Mother won't have to work so hard anymore, and Christopher Columbus.
What's the matter, Joe?
Well, the play. We've forgotten all about the play.
Oh, Joe, not again.
Oh, Joe, we've been rehearsing your old play every day for a week.
Well, you don't want it to be all bumbly and fumbly again for Marmy, do you? Well, we'll start with the fainting scene. You're stiff as a poker in that, Amy.
I can't help it, Joe. I never saw anyone fainting. And besides, I'm all black and blue now from tumbling around. From now on, if I can go down easily, I'll drop. If I can't, I shall fall into a chair and be graceful.
Christopher Columbus, you can't faint into a chair, Amy. People don't faint into nice, soft chairs. They faint right down on the floor with a plop, like this.
Oh, Joe. Get up, Joe, quick. There are two gentlemen at the front door.
Well, let them in.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Won't you come in?
Thank you.
Oh, Joe, do get up.
I know you. You're the boy from across the street.
I'm Laurie. And you're the one they call Joe.
Oh, how bully of you
Joe.
To... Joe! Oh, excuse me.
Well...
This is my sister, Meg.
How do you do, Miss Meg?
How do you do?
I always watch your games, Miss Joe. excuse me. This is my tutor, Mr. Brooke.
How do you do, Mr. Brooke?
How do you do? Master Laurie will explain our presence here, Miss Meg.
What? Oh, I am here with the compliments of my grandfather. My grandfather heard about the breakfast you gave away this morning and asks, wouldn't you please, as a favor to a lonely old man on Christmas, accept this dinner?
Oh, thank you. Wonderful.
If you should ever want to borrow my bicycle, Miss Joe...
Master Laurie.
Hmm? Oh, excuse me. And the very best of Christmases to you, one and all, from us, one and all.
Merry Christmas.
Good day, ladies.
Oh, good
Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas. Oh, how nice of Mr. Brooke.
Christopher Columbus, a whole plummy Christmas dinner. Look at that. And look here.
Oh, I smell plum pudding.
And I smell turkey. Oh, wait until Marmy sees this. Oh, Meg, isn't this just...
Mr. Brooke.
What's the matter with her?
He had such lovely manners.
Oh, Christopher Columbus, a whole beautiful Christmas dinner standing here before us, and you start mooning about it. Oh, let's get the food on the table before Mommy gets here.
Joe, as you can see, was not one for sentiment. At least, not yet. Joe considered herself the man of the family, now that Father March was away. I was inclined to look with a rather scornful eye on such girlish fancies as manners and fashion and parties and balls.
Joe! Oh, Joe, look. A regular note of invitation from Mrs. Gardner for tomorrow night. Isn't that wonderful, Joe? Oh, what shall we wear?
What's the use of asking what, Meg? When you know we should wear our poplins because we haven't got anything else.
I don't see how you can go on calmly eating apples at a time like this, Joe. Oh, if I only had a silk dress.
Christopher Columbus, I forgot. My dress is burnt in the back, and it shows horribly.
Oh, dear. Well, then you'll just have to sit still all you can and keep your back out of sight. Now, let me see. I'll wear a ribbon in my hair, and my gloves are clean. Though they aren't as nice as I'd like.
Oh, mine are spoilt with lemonade. So I shall have to go without.
Oh, Joe, you can't go without gloves. I'd be mortified if you did.
I can hold them crunched in my hand so no one will see. No, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll each wear one good and carry one bad. Then no one will know. Isn't that good?
Oh, but Joe, your hands are bigger than mine, and you'll stretch my gloves dreadfully.
Oh, then I'll go without.
Oh, all right. All right. You may have my glove. Only don't dirty it. And don't keep saying Christopher Columbus, and do act like a lady, will you?
I'll be as prim as a dish of prunes.
Joe tried so terribly hard to be prim and sedate that before the party was half over, she was bored to tears. Her only moment of fun came when she stuffed her pockets with cake to take home to Beth and Amy. No one could say that Joe didn't look after her family. In fact, sometime after the party, on a particular April morning, her family was very much on her mind as she hurried out of a strange-looking building downtown.
Oh, Laurie, how did you know I was upstairs?
I trailed you.
You had no right to, Laurie. You had no right to.
Well, I just wanted to make sure no harm came to you.
Oh, I'm sorry, Laurie, but I wanted it to be a secret.
Even from me?
Yes.
If you tell me, Joe...
I can't, Laurie.
I'll tell you one.
What's it about?
Not until you tell yours.
Well, but you mustn't tell now. Not a soul.
Oh, I won't.
Well, I've sold a story, Laurie.
What?
I have. I've been taking my stories up to this newspaper upstairs, Laurie, and first he said I needed more practice, and after a while, he seemed to like them more, and now I've sold one. Oh, think of it, Laurie. I actually sold a story for $1.50. Isn't it magnificent?
Oh, I'll say. Oh, when are you going to tell your family?
Oh, that's just it, Laurie. I want to surprise them. I'm going to buy something for Marmy with the money. Every time I sell a story, I'll get something for somebody in the family. So it'll make things easier at home, don't you see? Oh, I'm so happy, Laurie. I'm so happy I can do something for them all at last. Now, what's your secret?
Well, you'll be surprised when you hear it.
Well, what is it?
Well, remember the picnic we had last week and we couldn't find Meg's glove?
You mean the time your tutor came along with us? Yes.
Hmm. Well, I know where the glove is.
You do?
Yeah.
Where is it?
In his pocket.
Whose pocket?
Brooks.
Your tutor's pocket?
Yep.
All this time?
Yep. Isn't it romantic?
No. No, it's not. It's not romantic. I think it's horrid.
Horrid? Why, Joe!
He's trying to spoil everything. That's what he's trying to do. And I won't let him. I won't.
Well, Joe!
He's trying to break up our family and take Meg from us, but I won't let him. Never, never, never. Well, Meg, I suppose your John will be coming around soon. He does every day now for one excuse or another.
Don't say my John. It isn't proper or true. And I've told you I don't care about him, so please let's not say any more about it.
Any more about it? Christopher Columbus, everything's spoiled already. And soon he'll be pussyfooting around, asking you to marry him. And you'll say yes, and the family will be a shambles.
Oh, really, Joe, don't be so childish. Besides, I can't say anything till he speaks.
Hmm, and when he does, you'll probably burst into tears and say, oh, yes, John, yes, yes, yes.
Oh, don't be silly.
Well, if you ask my advice...
Meg. Oh, there's Mommy calling now. And I'll thank you not to discuss Mr. Brooke in such a silly way anymore, Josephine March.
All right, but don't you go being silly and dashing off with him. Coming, Marmy.
Now, Mommy's running toward us. Something's the matter.
No.
Marmy.
No, you're not to get excited, children. You're not to get excited.
What's the matter, Marmy? What's happened?
Get Beth and Amy.
Marmy, what's... A telegram?
Let me see, Joe. Your husband very ill in Washington Hospital... Come at once. Oh, no. I think everything you'll need is packed now, Mother.
Thank you, May.
I put your shawl in, Marmy. I thought you would want your shawl with you.
Yes, Beth, dear, that was very wise.
Oh, why doesn't Joe get back? She went to Aunt March's hours ago.
Maybe Aunt March won't lend her the money.
Now, let's not get nervous, children. Let's not any of us get nervous. With the Lord's help. Oh, there's Joe now.
Oh, Joe wouldn't ring the bell. It couldn't be. Oh, Mr. Brooke.
Won't you come in?
Oh, yes. I'm very sorry to hear of this, Mrs. March.
Thank you, Mr. Brooke. You're very kind.
I've come to tell you that I'm going along.
Going along?
To Washington?
Why, yes. Mr. Lawrence has a commission for me in Washington. and I've come to offer myself as escort.
Oh, you're too kind.
Oh, not at all. I merely happen to be going to
Washington. You're wonderfully kind, John.
Oh, Meg. Oh, Meg, do you really think so?
Yes, John.
Oh, am I too late? Am I too late? I ran all
Joe,
the way.
Joe, Joe, child, you're all out of breath. You...
Oh, Joe! I look different, don't I?
She's cut off all her hair.
Oh, Joe, you look awful. You look like a toothbrush.
Well, I don't care. The man gave me $25 for it.
$25?
Oh, dear, Mother, it's for the trip. Aunt March wouldn't
give... Oh, Joe. My dear, dear Joe.
Well, what's everybody standing around for? What are we all staring at? Well, we got the money, didn't we? You don't think I mind about my hair, do you?
Well, they say that time fixes everything. Joe's beautiful brown hair grew back in time, and Father March got well again. And in time, Meg forgot Joe's warning not to spoil things and said yes to John Brooke. And Joe began to feel a strange restlessness she had never known before.
I don't understand, dear. You want to leave us? You want to go away altogether?
It's not quite that, Mother. It's... Oh, Mother.
Well, try to explain it to me, Joe, and I'll try to understand.
Well, Meg's gone now, and Aunt March has asked Amy to go to Europe with her for the summer.
But it will be a wonderful opportunity for Amy.
I know, Mother. And there really isn't enough for me to do around here, Mother, anymore. And I thought of going to New York.
New York?
Oh, now, please, don't start shaking your head,
oh,
Mother.
Oh, no.
Well, your dear friend, Mrs. Kirk, is in New York, and she's been writing and writing for someone to teach your children. And besides, I'd be doing something to help. And, oh, Mother, I've got to do something for the family, or I shall simply die.
All right, dear. All right, Joe. I understand.
Joe went to New York, and at first in the big, unfamiliar city, Joe was a stranger to everyone, and everyone was a stranger to her, and she was lonely. But one evening, as Joe was coming home from another of her visits to the newspaper editors, she passed a certain door on the second floor of Mrs. Kirk's boarding house.
Oh, dear.
Good evening.
Oh.
You knocked, Fräulein?
Oh, no. I mean, it was my umbrella. It knocked.
Ah, I see.
I was just going by, and I happened to stop for a moment. Your song was so pretty.
You are lonely.
Lonely? Oh, good heavens, no, I'm never lonely. I am new here.
Ah, yes. I, too, am new here, Fräulein. Allow me, Professor Bear of Vienna. I'm here to teach.
And allow me. I am Josephine March. I am here to write.
Oh, so.
Well, I guess I'd better be getting upstairs. I have so much to do, so many...
Miss March.
Yes?
Perhaps sometime when you have not so much to do. You said that you write. You will allow me to read the stories you write sometime when you're free.
Oh, you can read them right now. You can read them right this minute. Don't you move now. I'll be back in a second.
But Joe, Miss March. Well, I don't see what is so funny.
With those socks.
Well, I don't know what is wrong with those socks. I mended them very well, I think.
Oh, too well. And look, these black ones mended with white wool, and these blue ones with brown wool. And these brown ones...
Well, I never seem to have the wool and the socks together at the same time.
Well, I can see that. Oh, your socks are a disgrace, Professor Bear.
I'm sorry.
From now on, I will mend them for you.
But you do...
In return for the German you've been teaching me.
Oh, that I like.
I warn you, I still know very little German.
And I warn you, I have very many socks. No, Miss March, no.
No?
No.
Well, the editor of the Weekly Volcano seems to think it's pretty good. In fact, he says my stories are going over very well indeed.
Then let me congratulate you that they go over.
Thank you. Well, what's wrong with it?
Everything.
Everything? The editor of the Weekly Volcano says it's... Well, what is wrong with it?
Well, the characters are not from life. One.
Well, they can do more exciting things that way.
That is true. Now, let me see. Yeah, here. The Witch's Curse.
The editor of the Weekly Volcano says it's a stunning title.
I see here 3 murders, 1 suicide, 2 kidnappings, 1 fire in the house, 1 fire out of the house, and here the other one. The Curse of the Coventrys.
Well, the Curse of the Coventrys paid the butcher's bill at home, and a phantom hand put down a new carpet. And I expect the Witch's Curse to send my sister Beth to the seashore for a month.
Oh?
She isn't well.
Oh, forgive me.
No, that's quite all right.
No, I'm not all right. I'm all wrong, and I'm stupid besides. Well, I don't imagine you will ever want to talk to me again now. I don't see why you should. I wouldn't want to either. There might be somebody in New York more stupid than I, but I don't know who it is. Probably nobody.
Oh, all right, all right. Please don't look so mournful. I forgive you.
You do. You are very talented, very kind, very good, very... I am very hungry.
Honestly?
I'll tell you what. Let us celebrate by having a wonderful dinner in a wonderful restaurant. We will have music and wine and... What's the matter?
When did this get here?
What?
This telegram. It's for me. I didn't see it here on the hall table. Oh, no.
What is it? What is the matter?
It's Beth.
Your little sister?
It says, come at once. That can't be, Beth. You must get well. You will.
No, Joe. I won't. Oh, I want to. I can't tell you how much I want to. But every day I lose a little more of life. It's like the tide, Joe. When it turns, it goes slowly. But it can't be stopped.
Oh, no, Beth. You're too young. I won't let you go. I'll work and pray and fight. Oh, there must be ways. It can't be too late, Beth.
Joe, you'll stand by Father and Mother.
I won't let you say such things.
Oh, I wish I could say I'm glad to go. But I love life so.
Oh, please, Beth, don't.
I don't know how to express myself. And I shouldn't try to anyone but you, Joe. But I've just got to tell you this. That all along, I felt it was... not intended I should live long.
Oh, don't.
No, please don't stop me. Oh, I'm not like the rest of you. I never made any plans about what I'd do when I grew up. I never thought of being married as you all did. I couldn't seem to imagine myself anything but stupid little Beth, trotting about at home of no use anywhere but there. I never wanted to go away. And the hard part now is leaving you all. I'm not afraid, but it seems as if I should be homesick for you, even in heaven.
Oh, Beth, Beth, darling.
How am I to tell you what happened now? By and by, the needle with which Beth loved to embroider became too heavy, and soon she put it down forever. Sometimes it seemed as though Joe would break down completely. And so the spring days came and went. The sky grew clearer, the earth greener. The flowers were up fair and early. And the birds came back in time to say goodbye to Beth. And no one in the world seemed so alone as Joe was then.
Why don't you try to write, Joe? Writing always used to make you happy.
I've no heart to write, Mother.
Perhaps if you just tried.
It's no use. Nobody'd care for the sort of things I'd want to say now anyway.
Well, we would. Your father and Meg and John and Amy and Laurie. Joe.
Yes, Mother?
I got a letter from Amy.
I know.
She met Laurie in Paris. Well, they said they're engaged.
I know.
Joe.
Yes, Mother?
Were you ever... Well, did you...
If you're trying to ask me, was I ever in love with Laurie, Mother? No. Not Laurie.
Not Laurie? Joe.
Oh, Mother, please. Please, I don't want to talk anymore. I can't talk anymore.
The weeks went by. Spring turned to summer, and summer to fall, and winter came. But nothing seemed to change with Jo. Despair seemed to have settled upon her, and a loneliness that nothing seemed to shake. And then it was Christmas again. The whole family, Amy and Laurie, Meg and John, father and mother, were gathered in the parlor around the old-fashioned piano when there was a knock on the door. Jo went to open it.
Good evening, Miss Marsh.
Frederick, I mean Professor Bear.
Am I intruding?
Intruding? Oh, you don't know how. Oh, do come in, come in.
But you seem to have a party. Maybe I'd better come back some other time.
Oh, no, don't go. I mean, it's no party, it's just the family. Do come in and meet them, please.
You have been ill, my friend.
Ill?
You're so pale.
Oh, I'm afraid I've been sad. But everything's going to be all right now. And we have a new bride in the family.
A new bride? Miss March, you are
Oh, no, not me. My sister Amy. She got married in Paris to our dear friend Laurie.
Then you are...
Yes, Frederick.
Joe, I never dared to hope. I tried to stay away. Joe, my dearest, you are crying.
Oh, no, I'm not, Frederick. I'm not crying at all. I'm just... Oh, welcome home, darling. Welcome home.
This is Walter Hamden, ladies and gentlemen. I'll be back in a moment to tell you about next week's play. But first, an important message I know you'll want to hear.
It doesn't matter whether your family is large or small. If it's united by steadfast, unselfish love, it's far better able to withstand the stresses and problems of modern life. And this is especially true when your family also shares a sincere love of God and lives as nearly as possible according to the teachings of our Lord Jesus Christ. Tonight's tender and dramatic scenes from Little Women were chosen to show how one family found happiness and security through such a combined love. In spite of being very poor, in spite of a steady succession of illnesses, accidents, and other typical family tribulations. Today, of course, it's especially difficult to keep families together, both physically and spiritually. There are so many other things outside the family that are intriguing, that tend to develop ever wider family separations. But regardless of all the disturbing factors in our modern world, families can be strong, happy and secure within themselves, when the entire family bases its operations on sincere devotion to each other and to God through the church. If you and your family are members of some church, you already know from your own experience that this is true. If you're not church members, may we urge you to find out for yourselves just how much strength and security you can get as a family and individually, when you receive the kind of education and guidance that only the church and an experienced clergyman can give. Perhaps you'll be able to find the help you need in the Episcopal Church. You are always welcome at your nearest Episcopal Church, and its clergyman is always ready and eager to give you whatever help you may require. To help you know something about the Episcopal Church and how it offers you a faith with which to find security and happiness in these difficult times, we have prepared an informative booklet called Finding Your Way. It'll be sent to you promptly if you'll simply write your name and address on a postcard and mail it to the station to which you are listening.
I'd like to thank our cast for a most delightful performance. And especially you, Joan Caulfield, for bringing the immortal Joe back to life again. Next week, friends, we shall present one of the most popular stories of all time, Charles Dickens's thrilling A Tale of Two Cities. And here to play the role of Sidney Carton, the man who gave his life for the woman he loved, will be the well-known star of stage and screen, Mr. Brian Ahern. I hope you'll join us. And now, an invitation from the Episcopal Church.
The Episcopal Church in your community cordially invites you to attend services this Sunday morning. If you're not familiar with the location of your nearest Episcopal Church or of the hours of service, you'll find both listed in your local newspaper or church directory. Your rector will be happy to have you join the Episcopal family. You'll find him waiting to welcome you personally when the services are concluded.
And that concludes this soundtrack on Heirloom Radio, a different kind of oldies program with yours truly, John Lovering. This podcast originates on SoundCloud.com, but it can also be heard on TuneIn, iTunes, Google Play Music, Podbean, Player FM, and iHeartRadio. Just search their podcast list for Heirloom Radio. That's H-E-I-R-L-O-O-M Radio. Be sure to check out my ever-growing list of radio programming from every genre, from mysteries and musicals to quiz shows and comedy, and everything in between. Please tell your friends about Heirloom Radio, a different kind of oldies program, and I do thank you for listening. Until next time, stay safe and be well.